talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
And welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. Good morning. It is September 7th. This is Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And we are here to talk about movies, which is what we do every Monday morning. We always like to start with the top 10. Michelle, what happened over the weekend?
Here's a rundown of the top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates. War Room continued its box office momentum, making it the number one film over the Labor Day weekend as it expanded from 1,100 screens to over 1,500 locations for the film's second weekend.
That's amazing.
I had a feeling it was going to do that. I called it last. Yeah, I said, I have a feeling it's going to be number one next weekend.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is, I don't know anyone who has seen The War Room. Mm-hmm. Do you?
I've heard from a couple of people on Facebook that have seen it and you're raving about it, but no one that I you know have talked to personally has seen it. So
it's that grassroots campaign that just they're keep plugging away. Number one estimated totals have it at 9.3 million. War Room success opening weekend had an opening weekend of 11.3 million. It continued it last week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The numbers just were very consistent. The film's social media accounts were being flooded with personal stories of how War Room has impacted the lives of viewers, with videos of unity between churches, redemption stories, spontaneous prayer, and theaters. So its 11-day total now stands at 27.6 million. Number two, Straight Outta Compton. The studio is having a banner weekend at the global box office with F. Gary Gray's movie topping the worldwide chart with 16.75 million. And on top of that, their Minions movie crossed the 1 billion mark globally. Hmm. We'll get to Minions in a minute, where they stand. Mm-hmm. Also, Universal Pictures' Jurassic World crossed the $1 billion milestone at the international box office, leading the studio to an unprecedented $6 billion in global grosses. That was announced Sunday. So right now, Jurassic World is the third highest grossing film of all time. And the biggest film of 2015 so far. Yeah. We still have Star Wars. Coming in at number three was A Walk in the
Woods. We still have Suffragette.
Coming in at number three was A Walk in the Woods from Broad Green Pictures at 8.2 million.
That's pretty good because I doubt that opened as nearly as many theaters as some of these other ones.
For number three at 8 million for that kind of little movie, sure.
Yeah, surprising, yeah.
Number four was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation with 7.2 million. Worldwide, the film has made $509 million. Coming in at number five was The Transporter Refueled from producer Luc Besson. Minus Jason Statham, the film came in at number five with $7.1 million. Number six is No Escape from the Weinstein Company. They're estimating came in at $5.4 million. Guy Ritchie's Man from U.N.C.L.E. was number seven with $3.4 million. Number eight was Lionsgate. I don't know if you've heard of this film. Lionsgate.
No. I saw the trailer.
Animated film Un Gallo con Muchos Huevos from Pantelion Films. The Spanish language movie brought in an estimated $3.4 million from the bigger cities.
It's animated.
I saw the trailer when I saw Shaun the Sheep, it was kind of unusual because it was subtitled, and I'm assuming that it's not dubbed. This is a foreign language animated film for kids, and it's at return on it. At number eight is very surprising.
Yeah, I mean not even like at the bottom 12, like at number eight. Yeah. So that's
It's very odd. Of course, they've got talking chickens and roosters and all that in the barnyard, but they've also got these weird eggs that have sprouted legs and hands and mouths and running around talking. I was like, oh, okay, that's odd, but I guess it's connecting.
I watched the trailer yesterday. It looks darling, but it's doing really well in Los Angeles and New York. Sinister 2 from Focus Features was number 9 at $3.4 million. 10 and 11, respectively, were Disney's Inside Out at $3.1 million and Ant-Man with $2.9 million. Rounding out the 12 was Minions with $2.7 million. And as I said at the beginning, the film has crossed the $1 billion mark.
Wait a minute. Where's We Are Friends? I thought word of mouth would...
Not even in the...
Is it even in the 20s yet? I mean,
top 20.
Yeah,
let's hope so.
Well, I noticed that it's at luckily it's still playing the first run houses, but I think a couple of them just have one showing a day right now. You know, they're not going to take a bath on that if they can.
I think it's partly because of my bad review over at wearemoviegeeks.com.
I like Zac Efron. I mean, he deserves a little better. I mean,
he needs to pick a better script.
Yeah, that's
no fault.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I don't know if we want to mention this real quick. Maybe we can post that on the Facebook site. But we saw that No Escape was at number 6, and I clipped an ad out of the local paper for it. And they're trying a different ad campaign, and they're trying to make it look like it's America getting back at the terrorists and all that, like you know, the return of Delta Force or something.
Like it's Chuck Norris should have been in it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's got you know Pierce Brosnan with his gun drawn, so you're giving away a part of one of the surprises in the film, and it's like it's ridiculous. It smells of a little bit of desperation.
Well, Owen Wilson looks a little bit like Chuck Norris. He's got that shaggy blonde hair.
That's right. And he looks like he's ready to jump on somebody there.
Well, let's start off with our reviews. Let's start out with Transporter Refueled. I think I'm the only one in the room that saw it.
Your clients have stolen from me.
That's not my problem.
It is now.
Dead.
It was number 5 with 7.1. I saw it Saturday night at 9 o'clock, and there weren't very many people there. But it was a pretty fun movie. It kind of reminded the movie we reviewed a couple of weeks ago called Hitman Agent 47. It's not a particularly good movie between the action scenes, but the action scenes are pretty spectacular. There's one scene at an airport where the hitman's father jumps from a moving airplane into his car. It's not quite what Tom Cruise did in Mission Impossible. But then the car like drives up the baggage claim into the airport and is driving around inside the airport. It's pretty silly. But it's not boring. It's a lot of fun. It's about, it takes place in the French Riviera, and there are these Russian pimps that are sending these young girls into prostitution. So then it jumps ahead 10 years, and these young women are all getting revenge on these Russian mobsters who must be billionaires from prostitutes because they all own yachts and planes and they're robbing their accounts and they hire the transporter to pick them up at their various bank robberies and things like that. It's not bad. I sort of had fun with it. It's not a great movie. It's not a movie that's going to stick with me for very long. What's this actor's name? Does anybody know?
Scarron was his last name, right?
He's in Deadpool coming out.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And apparently he's on Game of Thrones. So I guess if you're on Game of Thrones, you get a big movie contract. And he's fine. He doesn't have the charisma that Jason Statham had in the first three.
Is he actually playing the same character?
Yeah, he is. He's playing the same character.
Okay.
So there's nothing wrong with The Transporter Refueled. I think if you go see something called The Transporter Refueled, you know what you're getting into, and I think you'll have a pretty good time with it. If I had reviewed it at We Are Movie Geeks, I would have probably given it 3 stars, maybe 3.5 if I was feeling generous.
So there's no name actors in it besides
Ray Stevenson plays his father.
Okay.
I like him. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yeah.
And he kind of brings some humanity and some humor to the film, where the main character is a bit of a blank. And then there's all these beautiful women in it. I mean, every woman looks like they're a runway model, and the men look like they're male fashion models too. Even the scummiest villain sidekick looks like he just stepped out of a GQ magazine, but that's kind of run-of-the-mill for these kind of movies.
On a side note for that, we're giving away, we have a national contest running right now for The Transporter Refueled, where EuropaCore, the studio who's distributing The Transporter Refueled, is giving away a $100 Nike gift card, movie swag from The Transporter Refueled, and a few movie packs. So you'll get a Lucy, I believe, Blu-ray, and then a few Transporter movie pack. Hmm. So it's a nice contest we're running
now. A couple of the previous Transporter films in there, huh? Okay, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. All right, now let's review Grandma.
I need some help, Grandma.
Okay.
I need $600, $630.
For what?
I'm pregnant.
Did you guys like Grandma?
I did.
Yeah,
both
I liked
Grandma. What did you guys like about Grandma?
Lily Tomlin, from her one.
Seconded.
I was thinking, and I've seen this in a couple of other reviews, that this film was so tailored to her, and it reminded me of Michael Keaton in Birdman, that film was tailored directly to Keaton. If Keaton couldn't have done it, they wouldn't have made the film, I think. And with this, it looked like they were zeroing in on the appeal of Lily Tomlin.
They wrote it for her.
Yeah.
Paul
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of the character is based on her own life. I just really enjoyed seeing a film focused on her, because a lot of times she's just kind of brought in as a secondary character, as a supporting character that kind of comes in and does a couple of funny lines and then takes off. And here, you know, she's pretty much carrying this film, and I think it's a little too early, and I know there's a lot of good female performances coming up, but there's a chance she could get in the Best Actress category. I think definitely with the Golden Globes, with their Best Actress in a Comedy, I think she would definitely be one of the five, along with Amy Schumer and Melissa McCarthy, probably. Mm-hmm. So, and I like the rapport with her and this young actress, and I've drawn a blank on her. Yeah, they're very good together, and it's all the people they run into, they're during the course of this day, they're kind of going through her life and all these people that she's known over the years. It's an interesting, and her character is not likable for a lot of it.
No, not at all. Not for any of it.
For a lot of it, she's likable. She cleans the clock of that boyfriend, I was in love with her then.
People need to do their homework, though, I think, before they see it, just because, you know, just to make sure that you're not thinking you're going to see a Lily Tomlin grandmother, granddaughter day.
Well, it is R-rated, so that should clue them in a little bit.
Yeah, my problem with this, and you guys know I got a little aggravated at the screening, is I think it's very misleading. It's not a fun movie about an old lady spending the day with her grandma. Mm-hmm. It's about a grandma taking her granddaughter to get an abortion. Okay, and that's where I had a big problem with it, because I wonder if people like my parents are going to see a commercial for this movie and say, oh, this will be kind of a fun movie about an old lady. And then not only is she taking her to get an abortion, she is determined that this child get an abortion. The child has doubt. The child is conflicted. There's a point where she says, am I going to go to hell? What does grandma do? She dismisses that concern.
Well, no. Tom, there's one point in the film where Lily Tom's character says to her, he said, now this is something that you're going to be thinking about every day for the rest of your life.
She does kind of point that out.
I found it a little offensive. I'm worried about people that are going to go in there. Like I say, my parents saw the commercials. They asked me about it. If they would have come out of that movie, they would have been mortified and upset. Now, I'm going to get off my soapbox now. Here I go. I'm climbing off my soapbox. I didn't think it was a particularly good movie, even if you took the abortion politics out of it. I thought Lily Tomlin did not show much range in her performance. She was kind of bitter and angry and sort of spit out her dialogue at the same. Everybody in the movie was angry and sad, except this girl who was just confused. The daughter, played by Marcia Gay Harden, just seemed mad. There's even a scene where their car breaks down and they get picked up by this family in a van, and they all hate each other and they're all angry at each other.
Well, I think there is a change in some of the characters, though, at the end of it. I mean, you know, there's a turnaround with the Marcia Gay Harden character.
Mm-hmm. Which I really liked. I really liked that.
Yeah.
I think Paul White's really, as far as my take on it, Grandma's really, it's about women and their relationships with both sexes. It can at times be a stormy course to navigate, and the emotional dealings between mothers and daughters and grandmothers and granddaughters. And I think serving as both writer and director, Paul White's, I think he superbly captured the voice of women in everyday life. And I think he honestly portrays that. And I think he also portrays how we say and express our thoughts with each other. So I really liked the film. I thought it was really well done.
And I think that Lily's character, the grandma character, Liv, I believe is her name, mm-hmm. She does do an emotional turnaround at the end of it. At the start of it, I don't want to give away a lot, but she instigates a bitter breakup with her girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I think
from her partner dying,
I think that's part of survivor's guilt on her part, that she doesn't think she deserves to have another relationship. And at the end of the film, they sort of have a start of a reconciling or reconciliation of it that shows her character actually growing a little bit at the end of the film.
Well, it's a very slight film. What's it, around 80 minutes?
It's a pretty crisp clip.
It's got these cutesy little arbitrary titles. Chapter titles don't mean anything. Boy,
He did say, he's quoted as saying, he's not trying to make a statement in the film. In his personal life, he says, I'm a feminist. I would have said that even before Emma Watson's lovely speech to the UN, which she made, was it last year?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
The film is largely really about moving on from loss through wit and empathy and the ability to say, screw you.
Yeah, now when I first heard about this film, it was in Entertainment Weekly's winter preview guide, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they mentioned, you know, abortion. I will tell you, though, I went to their IMDb page, and they don't mention that. And I was like, you're right. You need to do a little bit of research.
And the official synopsis doesn't either. It doesn't mention anything about
you that. Well, we should do research because we're film journalists. Mm-hmm. But like I say, older audiences, older conservative audiences, mm-hmm. they don't research. They just see what the TV commercial shows them, and they wander into the theater.
Well, you know, they if they're going to go online to find the show times and all that, it doesn't take that much effort to just, you know, Google it. And, you know, if you're going to be investing that much money in an evening out because, you know, mm-hmm. evening prices, you're looking maybe at about $30 or $40 or something like that. You know, a few weeks ago, I had this with some friends on Facebook that they were decided to go to a couple of R-rated films that were just so horrified. I was like, they're rated R, you know?
On Kingsman earlier this year.
Yeah.
A lot of people weren't, they were thinking they were going to go see a straight James Bond type film, and then they get in there, and the church scene just.
Well, and the scene towards the end with, with the princess, that's all I'll say.
Thank you.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Sam Elliott in this too.
I did.
Yeah, he's sort of. For a while, I thought he was doing a variation of his character from
The Blind Dead.
Yeah, I'll see you in my dreams.
Yeah, I did too.
But there's a lot more to it.
He's the voice of reason.
He's the voice of the other side because whatever side you come down on.
I don't think it's that much. Is that it's his personal history with her, with the Lily Tomlin character that what sort of pushes him for his decision. And that whole sequence
that's
sort of takes
an
unexpected turn. Mm-hmm.
So Jim and Michelle like Grandma. I did not. But a movie that I would recommend to my parents, which Jim talked about last week and I saw this week, is Walk in the Woods. Mm-hmm. I think that's a much better film for older audiences. It's a great film, actually. And Nick Nolte is so good in it. And Robert Redford, you got to give him credit for letting Nick Nolte really get all the best lines in the film.
What goes up must come down. What the hell happened to Dom?
Sure. Learning to Drive is another probably good one if you want to suggest to older.
They're tougher to find, though, I'm sure. Well, that Grandma's not going to be opening wide, so, it'll be in just, probably the art houses. But Nolte's good in it. A friend of mine was on Facebook wanting to see it, and I said, well, it's definitely a date night. She said, well, I'm not going to take my kids because it's R-rated, but it's just R-rated for, Nick Nolte's character drops a few F-bombs, and it's nothing that, heard before.
There's the car BJ scene. You're forgetting that.
Oh, wow.
Where Nick Nolte says, I wish I was 20 again, and Redford says, I wish I was 50 again. So that's a really good movie. Jim talked about it more or less.
Oh, isn't the scenery gorgeous in it? Man. Yeah. Oh, just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm glad it's doing well. I think it'll continue to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And another movie that the three of us saw last week that opens on the 18th is called Pawn Sacrifice.
American chess prodigy Bobby Fischer became the youngest ever grandmaster in the history of the game.
Where do you go from here? I want to play the Russians. You're the best in the world, and I'm going to beat them all.
And all three of us really liked that one.
And how?
Yeah.
Michelle, what did you like the most about Pawn Sacrifice?
I'm a huge chess geek, not so much playing, but just following the history of it. And I loved how Ed Zwick portrayed both characters. I loved how he portrayed the game, the match of the century.
And those characters are, of course, Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky.
Thank you.
That's what the film's about, their big 1972 match. And also about Bobby Fischer's life leading up to that match.
You know, they kind of do a post credit what happened to him afterwards, which I did not know. But I have the book from 1972 after the big match was played and how it was played. And, the scenery, the sets, the makeup, everything really captured that time. Even from, they start off when he's a young boy and they lead you, all through his life. And James Newton Howard's score, another great score from him. I think even if you're not a chess fan, I think people will really like it.
They did a good job of making chess look cinematic, which had to have been a challenge. What'd you like about it, Jim?
I think I like the setting the best there. I love that late 60s, early 70s setting. They mix in some actual newscasts from that time along with some fabricated stuff, make it look grainy and, early videotape at that time. They even are able to drop in Tobey Maguire with Dick Cavett
in
one sequence, which was very, very entertaining.
They have have that on YouTube.
Oh yeah, it's very that's very well done. I love the main two actors in it. Liam Schreiber is mostly speaking in Russian through mm-hmm. the film, but he projects this sort of intense rock star sort of aura around him, with his big bouffant hair and his turtlenecks and all that, and you can tell he's kind of bristling at his handlers, the Soviet handlers, mm-hmm. and of course a lot of people are going to be talking about Tobey Maguire in this. That it's the showier role.
Oh, it is. And he has the mental breakdown where Liev Schreiber is just in control.
Oh, yeah, he's Mr. Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tobey Maguire's Bobby Fischer is just the opposite. I did think there was a little too much about Bobby Fischer's paranoia. He's constantly taking his phone apart because he's convinced he's been bugged. It kind of reminded me a little of The Aviator when Howard Hughes was kind of going nuts at the end of that movie.
And A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, and A Beautiful Mind too. In the way it was about a guy who sort of looked at the world through a different lens than the rest of us, because he was obviously on the spectrum. I guess you would have to be to control chess the way that Bobby Fischer did. But it's a really terrific movie, and I like the way that Zwick did not show chess pieces, moving in slow motion with some dramatic music playing, which a lesser director probably would have done that. There's a little bit of that near the end, but if he had done that at the beginning, in fact, the first match between Spassky and Fischer is off screen, which is an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting also he used some graphic animation to sort of show you what's going through the mind of the chess players, sort of showing where they're thinking about moving and the direction they're thinking about going. And
they did that at the very beginning.
But then
they abandoned that, which I think was a smart move too. A lot of good choices by Zwick. It was filmed up in Canada, and I wonder if maybe a hotter actor as Bobby Fischer might have improved it a tiny bit. I know Tobey Maguire is very, very good, but I'm wondering if they'd put Michael Fassbender or even Johnny Depp or somebody in the role, if it might have made the movie a bit of a more success. It might have pushed it back to Oscar season. I interviewed the producer, Gail Katz, on Thursday, and she did say that he was not their first choice, even though he's listed as a producer. And she said they had a list of actors that they approached before they approached him. And I asked who was on that list, and she would not tell me.
No.
Now, this isn't Oz the Great and Powerful, where Sam Raimi was telling who they wanted instead of James Franco.
And Ed Zwick always seems just a breath away from Oscar consideration, from award season, banter. He did Defiance with Liev Schreiber years ago. He did Last Samurai with Tom Cruise, and I like how he does his films. I like the approach. So it'll be interesting to see how this does. I like the supporting cast, Michael Stuhlbarg, and Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah, except he was driving me crazy with the cigarette in his mouth at the start of it. It's like, take it out of your mouth, for gosh sakes, when you're speaking to someone.
And Zwick usually works on a bigger scale than a chessboard. I mean, like Glory and Courage Under Fire.
Glory got some Oscar love.
It did. At the beginning.
But not for him.
I really hope the film does well.
Yeah, I think it'll do okay. I'm wondering why they're not pushing it back to Oscar season, but I guess they can't push everything back to Oscar season.
I don't know, but this is coming out on the
September 18th.
Yeah, well, that's the same day as Black Mass, so that's Oscar season.
Yeah.
So.
I guess maybe they pushed up Oscar season just like they pushed up the summer over the years.
Oh yeah.
So all three of us recommend Pawn Sacrifice, and I will be reviewing Pawn Sacrifice for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Look for that this Thursday evening. We're gonna see a couple of movies this week. The Visit. The Visit is M. Night Shyamalan's new horror film. I don't know too much about it. It appears to be about some children that spend a weekend with their grandparents, and something's wrong with the grandparents. I don't know. I don't really want to know. I'll just let it unfold.
He financed the movie. And Blumhouse also produced it with him, so they kind of, and Universal Pictures.
This is his first feature since After Earth?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the only actor I know in it is Catherine Hahn. Looks like she's playing the mother of the kids there. So, she's been a lot of supporting roles lately. Mm-hmm.
So that's something to look forward to. I will be reviewing The Visit this Thursday night. Look for my review of The Visit. My review of Pawn Sacrifice will actually be a week from Thursday. I think I said this Thursday. It won't be up online until the 17th. But look for my review of The Visit. Another movie that we're going to be seeing. Well, I've actually already seen it. It's called Captive.
My name is Ashley Smith. I'm a mother.
I don't trust you, Ashley. You scream again and I will have to kill you.
And it opens on the 18th. I'm not going to review it today. I'll review it a week from today. That stars David Oyelowo and Kate Mara. It's based on a true story about a crime that happened in Atlanta in 2007 where this black criminal who was on trial for rape, overpowered a guard, took her gun, walked into a courtroom, shot the judge dead, shot a court reporter dead, shot a guard dead, escaped from the facility, and ended up at this woman's apartment, and she was a meth addict, and he took her hostage. They did meth together. She read him this religious book, and I won't go on from there. But I remember the story quite well. I'll be reviewing that next week. I don't want to talk too much more about that.
But nice pronunciation of David Oyelowo's name. Better than me.
I interviewed David Oyelowo last Thursday, and you can look for that interview also at We Are Movie Geeks next week. Since I interviewed him, I thought it was important that I learned how to pronounce his name. And also opening this Friday, the 11th, is The Perfect Guy, which they're not showing us. Do we know anything about this movie?
No, it's from Sony.
Okay.
It's kind of reminding me of that one with Idris Elba and Taraj Henson from last year, where they didn't show it to us either there. And it was kind of, it looks like the same thriller mode kind of thing. Yeah.
It doesn't look particularly original, but... But neither did The Gift, so you never know with these movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and like I said, they're not showing it to us, so I guess we won't be having a review at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. So, Michelle.
Oh, the movie was No Good Deed. I'm sorry. One more time.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this this weekend it's Labor Day weekend, so you know if you weren't seeing a movie or watching football games or you know having the day off from school or work, the film community at large was either at one of two film festivals: the Venice Film Festival, which started September 2nd, runs through the 12th, and the Telluride Film Festival, which is September 4th through the 7th. In Colorado. There were quite a few films that made their debuts that got some shots in the arm from the weekend festivals. One was Spotlight that's the Michael Keaton movie, Steve Jobs from the Danny Boyle, written by Aaron Sorkin, Johnny Depp's Black Mass, and Tom Hooper's The Danish Girl. Next weekend is the really big International Film Festival, Toronto International Film Festival. It's another harbinger of the upcoming award season. It begins September 10th, and that will be the opening night film is Demolition with Jake Gyllenhaal, followed by Ridley Scott's highly anticipated The Martian.
What is Demolition?
Yeah, that's not striking a bell.
I don't know much about it. We ran a preview of it a few weeks ago of what Toronto is coming up.
Well, I know that Jake is in Everest, but I wasn't aware of this one. Yeah.
It's Jean-Marc Vallée's. That's the director who did two years ago, actor won Best Actor. But it is his film. So that's Toronto. However, a little sampling of what was shown. Venice got their first look at The Danish Girl.
Oh, yeah. What's the advance buzz on that?
That's really good. It's inarguably, from Windy Wire, they said it's arguably Oscar ready.
The Dallas Buyers
Thank
Club,
you.
That's the thing
you.
He did.
Okay. All I had was Jake Gyllenhaal in the back of my mind.
Matthew McConaughey was a hell of a Oscar, soon we forget. Yeah,
I hope it does better for Jake than Southpaw did.
Although, and I mean, there's so far, they also got to see Everest, although we've had some LA people see Everest, and they said it's, you know, it's very intense. Not Oscar, you know.
Not but, Oscar intense.
Just good.
Just crowd-pleasing intense.
However, The Danish Girl is also Alicia Vikander's. Performance is getting a lot of buzz. They're saying she's the one to really watch. Eddie Redmayne stars in it, and he won the Oscar last year. And they, you know, but a lot of reviews said, you know, he's great, inhabits the character, but it's Alicia's role that's the one to really watch.
His
out for.
Is the showier role again.
Telluride also, people got a first look at Suffragette that stars Meryl Streep. Mm-hmm. Good word coming out of that.
So is this Carey Mulligan's film, pretty much?
It is. It's produced, written, and directed, and starring women. So they're saying it might fall into the category of Made in Dagenham and 2014's Pride. It might be you know, audience pleaser, but we'll see what happens comes award season.
Helena Bonham Carter's in that too.
She's
isn't
also
she?
Okay. In it. Yeah. Yes, Meryl Streep did show up at Telluride, so that was really well received. The documentary from Davis Guggenheim, he named me Malala, was also shown. Well received, gripping story, eloquently told. That's a documentary. Right now, I would put that number one at best documentary.
Amy's still strong, I'll bet. But I recall seeing Malala on with Jon Stewart several months before he left.
That's why I kind of give it the edge. It's just, it's true story. It's kind of this girl that comes and wins the Nobel.
Well, I thought it was already out, so that's what I know, because she was she had a clip from it on the show.
And
so
this opens October 2nd. Backtracking a little bit back to Black Mass, which opens September 18th.
They're first saying a week from tonight.
Exactly.
Yes, yes. Looking forward to it.
That debuted in Venice. Reviews are saying Depp has never been better.
Yeah, and they said Edgerton is getting good reviews as well as his friend and FBI agent.
Yeah, that's right.
Benedict plays his
Benedict
senator brother.
Benedict Cumberbatch, yeah. Exactly. Looking forward to that. Yeah,
exactly.
Dakota Johnson plays his wife from Fifty Shades of Grey.
There you go.
I don't know if she gets naked as much as she did in Fifty Shades of Grey. Probably not.
Yeah.
Another movie we had talked about before was the movie called Room.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kidnap drama.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Starring
Brie Larson.
Right. They're saying she's great in it, but it's the young actor that stars with her, last name Tremblay. He's the one that they're saying he could possibly maybe looking at a supporting actor nomination. So the chatter about that will start building now that it's been seen at Telluride. Steve Jobs was well received. That movie opens up October 9th. Kudos for Danny Boyle, Michael Fassbender, Aaron Sorkin. You know, it really shows the true man.
They say it's very dialogue heavy.
Yeah, and that's Aaron Sorkin.
And it takes place in like three locations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not much action.
Yeah.
And his real life partner was there for the screening. Steve Wozniak.
Wozniak.
Really, said they captured him better than anything else. And
is Seth Rogen playing him in it or no?
Yes. Also opening at Telluride, they also got a first look at Spotlight. Spotlight opens nationwide November 6th, but that is... It tells the true story of the Pulitzer Prize winning Boston Globe investigation that would rock the city, cause a crisis in one of the world's oldest and most trusted institutions. When the newspaper's tenacious Spotlight team...
The abuse Church in the Catholic scandal. Church. Okay.
Yeah. That's from director Academy Award nominee Thomas McCarthy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really well received. The standout, not only the standout Michael Keaton, it's an ensemble cast.
Yeah, that's a big cast, yeah.
But Mark Ruffalo was getting some buzz. Scott Feinberg over at The Hollywood Reporter, same thing about Michael Keaton, a lot of, you know, Oscar viability for that. Two other, if I can just mention really quick, two other movies that are still in the Oscar mix was Carol, which opened up at the Cannes Film Festival in May.
Todd Haynes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Still receiving a lot of buzz. The Telluride Film Festival had done a tribute to Rooney Mara over the weekend. So they're still trying to figure out who they're going to put in for lead actress. Is it Kate Blanchett? Rooney Mara takes the back seat and does supporting actress. So they're trying to that's going to be from Weinstein Films. And another small little film called 45 Years from Andrew Hay. It stars Tom Courtenay and Charlotte Rampling. They won the Silver Bear Awards at the Berlin Film Festival earlier this year. And so that also screened at Telluride. Their performances are also receiving a lot of Oscar buzz.
It's a lot of Oscar bait coming up, it sounds like.
Yep.
Well, there always is this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one movie that did not win any Oscars in 1980 was Flash Gordon. Flash! Starring Sam Jones as Flash Gordon and Max von Sydow. Flash Gordon kicks off the newly announced Tivoli Midnight schedule. The Tivoli is the local art house that shows midnight movies every Friday and Saturday night. I host every Friday night, and I always ask custom trivia. I'm kind of excited about Flash Gordon on the big screen, aren't you, Jim?
Oh, sure. See those little wavy sort of backdrops. They look like they were pouring dye into different liquids. Very strange. And Brian Blessed as the king of the Hawkman is so funny. And Timothy Dalton is just perfect as Prince Baron.
Yeah, and Ornella Muti is the female lead, a sexy Italian accent.
And a score from Queen.
Yeah, this Queen
Max
score.
Max von Sydow is Ming the Merciless.
Yeah, I think after the Ted movies, I think Flash Gordon has sort of developed new cult following. I bet if the Ted movies hadn't come out, they wouldn't be showing it at midnight at Landmark.
So
So that's the 18th and 19th. And the weekend after that, which I guess would be the 24th, 25th, is the original Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Oh.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Which is kind of a good choice, too. I hope that draws a good crowd.
What do they usually show it in? Do they show it in?
No, they show it in some HD format.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
They may just show Blu-rays. I'm not sure.
I was just curious.
Has that came out in 67
68,
or
68?
68, okay.
Yeah, Franklin Schaffner directed with Charlton Heston. And
yes.
Linda Harrison, who I met, a nice lady. She plays.
And big stars under a lot of makeup.
Yeah. Roddy McDowall, of course.
Kim Hunter, yeah.
Evan,
Maurice Evans,
yeah, as Dr. Zaius. Yeah. Weekend after that, Let the Right One In. That was the Swedish vampire movie from 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, that's
remade.
Terrific.
That is a good scary movie. And the remake's good, too.
Yeah, in a different way, yeah.
The weekend after that is a movie from earlier this year that we really liked that I think is going to end up on a lot of our top 10 lists, is What We Do in the Shadows.
Awaken! Awakey!
I just really like having a good time with my friends.
Beacon. Hi. Hey, Beacon.
Yeah, is this the quickest turnaround to a midnight movie that they've done?
That seems just so...
Was that in February or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just out this past winter. I've watched it 3 or 4 times. It's really funny. Every time I watch it, I pick up something new.
It's really clever. Great. Really entertaining.
And the weekend after that is Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
What is your name?
Sir Galahad of Camelot.
What is your quest?
I seek the Grail.
What is your favorite color?
Blue. No, yellow.
That's a little perennial.
Cue the coconut shells.
Yeah. I've got a bunch of those coconut shells. I've shown that at my Super 8 show, and I always pass out coconut shells for people to knock together. And then we're going to end the midnight season, which we do every October with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and that'll be 2 weekends in October.
What's showing this weekend?
This weekend is Harold and Maude. This weekend's Harold and Maude, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they get a good crowd with that. I hope they do.
I hope they do, too. That's one that we saw at midnight back in the late 70s.
Yeah, one of the first big midnight movies, I guess. Yeah.
So that's the Tivoli Theater on Del Mar. Go to WeirdMovieGeeks.com for more details about the upcoming midnight shows.
What's he doing? They're weird during the day.
I was just cleaning it.
And even weirder at night?
Mom, there's something wrong with Nana and Papa.
They're just old.
Bear with it for a couple of days.
Would you mind getting inside the oven to clean it?
The Visit opens Friday. I'm seeing it tomorrow night. Look for my review Thursday at Weird Movie Geeks. And it is written and directed by the one and only M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan.
Did I mispronounce it?
You put an A in there, I think, didn't you? That's something like that?
Shyamalan.
It's no longer funny to mispronounce his name. So let's just call him M. Night for the rest of this discussion. Mm-hmm. To me, M. Night is sort of hit and miss, but Michelle is actually the president of the local fan club.
That's right.
The M. Night fan club. Michelle has historically defended M. Night when others are attacking him. So I admire that. Michelle, what is it about M. Night and his films that you like so much?
I just like every time he tries something new, he tries something different. Granted, some of the films, there are some similarities to some Twilight Zone episodes, but by and large, I mean, to come out of the gate with The Sixth Sense and all the way to, and me being award season watcher, you know, for the movie to be nominated like it was, I just appreciate what he tries to do every time. All his films in total have amassed more than $2 billion worldwide. I'm looking at his list,
and he hasn't really made that many films.
No, he hasn't. Yeah. You know, and this summer, he said he would never get into TV, but he did with the show Wayward Pines, which I really liked. It was on Fox. It was only 10 episodes. Had a great cast. Had a primarily, like, movie cast. Melissa Leo, Terrence Howard, Carlo Gugino, Toby Jones. So, Matt Dillon, I really liked what he did with Wayward Pines. He directed the pilot episode.
Did it have a supernatural element?
It was more of an end of the world, and this little town of Wayward Pines is living kind of, they're surrounded by this wall, and it's supposedly the year 4000. I don't know how they can expand past what we did in the 10 episodes. But Shyamalan, he's been making movies since he was, you know, like a lot of filmmakers, making movies since the young age of 16 in his hometown. He was born in Philadelphia. By age 16, he completed 45 films. Went to...
Like Super 8.
Super 8, exactly. Films, yeah. Exactly. He went to NYU Tisch School for the Arts to study filmmaking. During this final year at NYU, Shyamalan wrote Praying with Anchor. Semi semi-autobiographical screenplay. The film,
it was a feature film.
Exactly.
Yeah, he starred in it.
And it was screened at the Toronto International Film Festival that year alongside Reservoir Dogs and Strictly Ballroom. In the years that followed, Shyamalan wrote Stuart Little for Columbia Pictures and completed his first mainstream feature, Wide Awake, a film that explored a boy's search to discover his faith.
And it had Rosie O'Donnell and Dana Delaney.
Exactly.
Who were also both in Exit to Eden wearing leather about that time.
I think so, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not that I would want to see Rosie in leather again.
In 1999, Here Comes the Sixth Sense, starring Bruce Willis. It catapulted Shyamalan into fame.
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
I don't see anything. Are you sure they're there?
They're everywhere.
He was on the cover of, was it Time?
Yeah, he was on the news cover Spielberg, of Newsweek the first time.
Newsweek, I guess that's too mixed up.
It was Newsweek, the first time, you know, they had ever put a director on. The Sixth Sense was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Director, Best Picture, Original Screenplay, Best Editing, Best Supporting Actor for Haley Joel Osment, and Best Supporting Actress for one of my favorite, Toni Collette. However, went home 0-6 from the Oscars. And then again, Shyamalan collaborated with Bruce Willis again in 2000 on the film Unbreakable alongside Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Unbreakable is, for many people, Unbreakable is their favorite Shyamalan film. A film ahead of its time, Unbreakable has become an underground hit in the years since its release. Shyamalan once again explored the idea of man questioning his faith in the 2002 box office success Signs, which starred Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix.
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water?
Well, let's go back to Sixth Sense for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Sixth Sense made a boatload of money.
It did.
Mm-hmm. And it had the twist.
Yeah.
And it's shocking now, 16 years later, that more people didn't see that twist coming. I don't think that twist would work today.
I totally didn't.
But even seeing the trailer and then seeing the film, I was surprised. Were you surprised, Jim?
I was surprised, yeah, very much so, yeah. And I was surprised how good it was, for one thing.
In retrospect, it just seems like everybody should have seen that coming.
At the time, he's the only one, for the most part, and I think it's kind of, in recent films, has fluctuated, but his posters, he was the only one who would have his name above the title of the film on the poster.
And The Sixth Sense was at number one at the box office for a long time.
Yeah, when people started finding it, and that film opened on his birthday. He's had many of his films. He's kind of superstitious that way, on August 6th of that year. So, and the movie, the films, as of right now, I think the film's worldwide gross is like $672 million.
And Unbreakable did well, and Signs did well. But then things started falling apart for old M. Night a little bit, wouldn't you say, after Signs?
Well, for some.
For some.
Yeah.
In 2004, Shyamalan released The Village, which starred Bryce Dallas Howard and Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, and I think that's the first time that people started sort of scratching their heads. I've read that book. What's the name of that book?
The Man Who Saw Dreams, something like that.
That was after Lady in the Water.
That's right.
That was him selling Lady in the Water in that book. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. This was after The Village, yeah.
Yeah, after The Village, he got together with Michael Bamberger, and they did The Man Who Heard Voices, or How M. Night Shyamalan Risked His Career on a Fairy Tale. So that was about, that book, which I have, is about the production of Lady in the Water.
But much of it is about how thin-skinned M. Night was.
He was. He took it very to heart.
They talk about how somebody from Ain't It Cool News saw a sneak and had signed a form that they wouldn't write anything, but they did. So M. Night went over to his house and made him cry.
What I remember from the book is his meeting with the Disney people to pitch the idea for Lady in the Water. Yeah. And the guy is saying, you got anything else? M. Night saying, no, this is it. This is my next movie.
And walked right over to Warner Brothers.
I think that, in my opinion, that's his worst film.
Well, that's where he lost me. I didn't make it through the screening of it. I left. I got embarrassed for Paul Giamatti in it.
Yeah. And Village
is okay. The ending is pretty... I didn't care much for it.
Paul Giamatti is so good in Lady in the Water.
But they hit him on the couch acting like a little child, so this woman would tell him the story of the Narfs and all that. I was like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this, guy. But I know some people that were kind of disappointed with Unbreakable. They were expecting another Sixth Sense,
but
instead they got this. Instead they got a really thoughtful sort of exploration of the whole superhero idea, and it's gotten kind of a cult following in the in the years since then, and people have appreciated it more.
And they've been talking about a sequel, haven't they?
That would be great. Yeah,
more so even now. Yeah. So that's hopefully in the works. After the Lady in the Water took in a modest $72 million. After that, he came back in 2008, wrote, directed, and produced The Happening.
The Happening. That is my favorite.
I like that. Mark Wahlberg stars in it. The film follows a man and his family as they try to escape from an inexplicable natural disaster.
Yeah. The movie itself is a natural disaster. That's what I like about it. It is such a train wreck that I've watched it over and over.
However,
I just can't get over it.
Roger Ebert loved The Happening. In his Roger Ebert loved the film and wrote, Shyamalan's approach is more effective than smash and grab plot mongering. I suspect I'll be in the minority in praising the film.
Yeah, I was going to say he was pretty adamant in his dislike of The Village, so that was quite a turnaround for him.
Yeah, exactly. You exactly.
Know. Got these ridiculous scenes with Mark Wahlberg singing to plants. And
I've got to see this. Like I say, he lost me with Lady in the Water, and I didn't come back for a couple of movies.
Well, it's about mass suicide. Something is in the air, and everybody's killing themselves.
Right.
And
it was
so people are jumping off of riding lawnmowers and throwing themselves in front of them, and people are at the zoo, and they're throwing themselves into the lion's den, and it just goes on and on. But like I say, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. After The Happening comes The Last Airbender.
Now, that's the only one on this list I have not seen.
The Last Airbender. Yeah. Shyamalan said he was watching with the family and saw it on Nickelodeon, and that was their big, you know, it was once again written, directed, and produced by M. Night Shyamalan with Frank Marshall.
Who's in that? I know Dev Patel is in that.
Dev Patel is about the only name I recall. No, this was based on the Nickelodeon cartoon called Avatar: The Last Bender.
It was supposed to be the first of the fantasy trilogy. But that kind of
it's easy to say until it doesn't make any money.
Now, what I heard about this film when it came out was this is when 3D really started to explode, and all the studios were rushing to upconvert their films to 3D. And I heard stories of people getting just terrible headaches from film. And they've got it down fairly well now. But with that, and I think with the remake of Clash of the Titans, people were having a tough time watching it.
It looked, it looked pretty. In between there, before he took his next gig, he did produce the supernatural film Devil.
That's a good movie.
And that's really
I don't know why he didn't direct that.
No, he just decided to produce this. Well, it was supposed to be part of the Night Chronicles. They were going to do like a series of films under like Night Chronicles title. Night Chronicles Devil.
The guy who directed No Escape, which is number 6.
Exactly.
And directed the Devil. And it was a pretty clever script. He wrote that by himself, or did he write that with somebody?
Devil?
Yeah.
I believe that was with the directors. I think co-produced and co-directed it.
That's about
Dowdles.
Five or six people on an elevator. And the whole movie, not the whole movie, but the movie basically takes place on this elevator, and there's a detective trying to figure out what's going on the elevator, and one of them's
the devil.
Yeah,
that's exactly, what. Exactly. And you're trying to figure out as everybody's being plucked off one at a time.
And the lights go off, and then the lights will go back on, and one of them has died. Have you seen that, Jim?
No, I haven't. I just remember seeing the trailer.
I think it's on Netflix. It's a
small little horror movie, but it's really good. That was the one though that they showed at Comic Con, and when they showed it at Comic Con and Shyamalan's name appeared in it, people started booing.
When I saw the trailer for that, at the end of it, it said, from M. Night Shyamalan, I heard the whole audience groan.
I just hope he wasn't at Comic-Con when they booed him.
No, not for that one. No, he wasn't. So then after Devil came out, that's when After Earth.
Yeah, which I think is his worst.
That was Will Smith's passion project.
You want to blame it on Will, huh?
Yeah.
I want to blame it on everybody for doing a bait and switch.
But After Earth, The Last Airbender, The Happening, The Lady in the Water, all these movies were nominated for Razzie. For worst director, every single one of them.
With After Earth, you think you're going in to see a Will Smith movie? No, you're seeing a Jaden Smith movie.
That's exactly.
It's painful. They should have called it After Birth. It was so painful.
Yeah.
I took my kids, and usually my kids were like 8 and 12, and at that age, they usually like everything, and they're going, Dad, this movie's terrible.
But Shyamalan and Jason Blumhouse, who's also co-producing the film, showed up at Comic-Con back in July. They had a panel. They showed part of the film. You know, they did interviews. So from what I've seen so far, I don't know. You guys have seen the trailer. What do you think?
Visit?
For The Visit.
I know people have seen it, and apparently it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It kind of goes off the rails in kind of a fun way from what I've heard.
Right.
I'm going to try to keep an open mind. I enjoyed Sixth Sense so much. Oh, yeah. I'm still rooting for the guy. I'm not contributing to the fun that was put together to send him back to film school. I'm not part of that group.
There are a few of us who really like Lady in the Water. I think the ending, and I love James Newton. I love that he works with James Newton Howard, you know, one of my favorite composers with many of his films. So
I'll be reviewing it.
We'll see. I mean, there's not much opening next weekend, so we'll see how.
I think I read that Joaquin Phoenix has signed on to M. Night's next feature.
Yeah, he's writing his next movie right now, so it's another thriller.
With a twist ending, I hear.
Well, it doesn't help with Lady in the Water. You know, they talk about Narfs, and of course, that was around the time the Animaniacs cartoon show started with Pinky in the Brain and Pinky going, the Pinky going Narf. So that's all I thought about when I heard that name in it.
Right. So we all are looking forward to The Visit, I guess, especially Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle likes M. Night. I like some of M. Night. Jim likes some of M. Night.
Mm-hmm.
But he's made some good films and some bad films, like most directors.
Eat them up. Yum, yum, eat them up. Yum, yum, eat them up. Yum, yum, eat them up.
Sunday, I do want to plug something that I will be hosting. It is the Super 8 comedy show. I used to do a monthly show called Super 8 Movie Madness, where I show these movies on Super 8 sound film in condensed format. They would take a movie like, Blazing Saddles, for example, and they would condense it down to 15 minutes. This is how they used to sell movies for home entertainment back in the 60s and 70s. And I collect these things. I have like 500 of them, so I would do a monthly show. I haven't been doing that since January. But I will be returning with my Super 8 show this Sunday. This is at the Bookhouse. And I will be showing some classic comedies, Abbott and Costello, The Marx Brothers, W.C. Field, Shirley Temple. I will be showing that cut of Blazing Saddles that I just mentioned, and Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The Bookhouse is located in Maplewood on Manchester, right across the street from Shop and Save there. I don't know the exact address, but it's The Bookhouse. Look it up. And that starts at 7 o'clock to 10 p.m., and it is free.
Yeah, around there, the Sutton and
yeah, just in Manchester. East of Sutton, kind of. Yeah, just a block or two west of Schlafly.
Yeah.
Same side of the street.
That's a nice range there from the early 30s to the 70s and everything.
Yeah, I may even show Woody Allen them. I've got Woody Allen Take the Money and Run, which is really a great little condensation of a funny Woody Allen movie. They're doing a week-long comedy fest. They're doing comedy readings and improv and stand-up comics, and I think there's even another film night where some local filmmaker's got a new comedy that they're showing, so this is all part of the Bookhouse's week-long comedy fest, but that's Sunday night, Super 8 comedy night, and that is September 13th.
Yeah, warm yourself to those red-hot projectors there. They'll be taking a while to cool off after that night.
It's down in the basement. It's a pretty good-sized room. I think there'll be enough room to accommodate everybody.
Okay.
We're going to sign off here in a second. I do want to say goodbye to an actor that, when I was a little kid, seemed to be in every other movie I saw as a kid, because he was sort of one of Walt Disney's big stars, and that is, of course, Dean Jones, who passed away last week.
Was 84, I think he was.
Something like that.
But he had an interesting career prior to the Disney stuff. He was in the original cast of Company on Broadway, the Stephen Sondheim musical. He did, I'm not sure if it's Sunday in New York, he did a movie with Jane Fonda. It's something like that. Period of Adjustment, maybe it was.
He was in A Two and a Guillotine, which is a terrific horror movie with Connie Stevens and Cesar Romero. That was directed by William Conrad.
And, of course, later on, he was the villain in the first Beethoven film.
Right. Which was clever casting.
Also in Clear and Present Danger, 1994.
Oh, my goodness.
I was just looking through IMDb, and wow. Okay.
People zero in. Well, because the first Love Bug in 69, that was the biggest grossing film of the year.
Yeah, that was huge.
And this is, the year of Midnight Cowboy and all these sort of alternative, hippie type films. And here this Disney G-rated flick comes out and just stays at the top of the box office.
But he was a real likable, affable kind of guy, kind of a Fred McMurray type. type. I don't think he would have made a convincing villain in anything. But, you know, we're older. We're older movie buffs. I think a lot of younger movie buffs have no idea who he was. But we used to see him at the theaters all the time back in the 60s and 70s. So, rest in peace, Dean Jones. Next week, we'll be back to review The Visit, Captive, maybe The Perfect Guy if one of us sees it. And, I don't know, whatever's showing here in town. There's a lot of movies coming up, but we've got to wrap it up for now. This is We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
Listen again next week.
Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.